It went straight down the middle. Then it started to hook.
When you and Don decided that you guys were going to go play professionally, you spent most of your travel with him in an Airstream trailer, right?
Right.
And I just got to say, what just quickly here, you joined in 1970, Rookie of the Year that year, leading money winner 74, 82, 83, Player of the Year 74, 81, 82, Vare Trophy 74, 75, 81, 82, 83. I mean, plus you had the two majors of the Women's U.S. Open. Boy, what, that's some record, Joanne.
Yeah, it, you know, you just keep playing. You're trying to win every week, but, you know, you just don't realize how well you've done until, like, the end of the year and whatnot. The first win was Wendell West, my rookie year, and I tied with Marilyn Smith, and we went into a playoff. So on the first hole, Marilyn tops it, and par four. So I get up, you know, now she can't get home in two. So I get up, and, you know, all I have to do is make par, right? So I hit this ball. It is going out of bounds and hits the stake and bounces back in.
Oh, my.
So then Marilyn tops another one, and I chunk one up onto the green, and I think I three-putted for the win or something. But anyway, that was my first win. Kept playing and playing and not doing well. And what you don't realize is you slip into, as an amateur, you didn't care where you hit it. You'd go find it. But as a pro, for some reason, you feel like you should not make mistakes. You know, you should hit everything much better than as an amateur. And so you start steering it. And your game, you know, your swing gets more upright and U-shaped instead of nice wide swing. So you lose distance, you lose accuracy and all that. So to finally get the win towards the very end of the year was great for me.
The first victory that you had sort of alluded to earlier that I wanted to get a little bit on was the win at the Burdines Invitational, which was at the Country Club of Miami in 1969. This was while you were still an amateur, and it was by one over Shirley Englehorn.
Right. It was their richest tournament. Total purse, $40,000, I think. And I was doing fine, and then on the backside I got really playing well, and I don't know what I shot, 31 something on the back nine, anyway, to come from behind and beat Shirley Englehorn. I remember Carol Mann saying afterwards, she didn't know I was walking behind her, but she said, imagine a GD amateur winning our richest tournament.
Were most of those pros back then pretty welcoming?
Yeah, I had no trouble with them, you know. I didn't ever spend any time with most of them because I had my husband with me, and did you know, Don and I did everything together and developed you know, friends in every town because you'd come back every year and play for several years. So
yeah,
that was it. But you know, friendly with all of them, but just.
I think I found an old newspaper clipping write up about this event, and it mentioned that you played with Kathy Whitworth in the second round.
Yeah, she, Kathy fascinated me. You know, her record is unbelievable because it's so hard to win and be leading money winner and come back again the next year and try and gear up. And because you're required to play in every event, or try to anyway, and you have to do a lot of interviews, which takes right. away from your practice time. So, you know, her record is unbelievable. But her swing fascinated me. You know, I learned the game mimicking a good swing, you know, which when I was growing up was men, not the women. And so I would mimic their rhythm to everything.
Like Gene Littler?
Yeah. Yeah, although I was, yes. But with Whitworth, she would take it up and then drop into it, you know, and hit it well. But when she got in a bunker, you know, being that was one of my fortes was sand play, Whitworth would get up. And she'd be leaning left with her whole upper body and then pick it up and drop it down and knock it out. Well, that's fine. But then she'd get one where she's this far from the lip of the bunker and set to it that way, you know, and hit it out and hit it a foot from the hole. And what I had trouble with, and luckily, Don would catch it if I was playing bad. And he'd say, I'd say when we finished, you know, what am I doing? You know, I lost everything. And he said, well, how does this look? And I said, you know, I get so fascinated with Whitworth, I would start addressing the ball that way, you know. I don't know why I wanted to mimic, but I had to watch that a couple of times. And then, you know.
With this being an audio-only format for now on the podcast, we'll have to explain to our listeners that as Joanne's talking about Whitworth, she's got a big left lean toward the hole with her body.
Right, I forget. Yeah, upper body tilted way left.
Yeah, well, you mentioned her record. I guess what always fascinated Bruce and I as we visited with Kathy as our first woman guest was not just all the wins, but her 95 seconds.
Fascinating.
Really. Whitworth's whole theory was if you weren't totally exhausted when you finished, you didn't try hard enough.
Well, yeah. Interesting.
I never, I worked hard grinding on a round where you're not playing well. You know, you have to stay in there and grind and survive, you know, shooting 80, get it down to, you know, the low 70s. And I always maintain you're not really a true top professional unless you can shoot in the 60s when you're swinging bad.
Yeah.
Figure out how to get it in the hole, right? Yeah. Were you or any of the ladies at the time, and I'm talking about this time of your career, doing much beyond playing to stay fit?
No. No. I smoked and drank, which is against every rule. People accused me of beer drinking, but I'm allergic to beer and wine, so it never works. The fact that I fished when I was off, we would take the travel trailer and go up into the mountains in Tennessee where we had a place, and wade the streams and whatnot. So you're hiking down to the river and then up and down it back through the slippery rocks and everything. So, you know, you stayed in pretty good shape.
Kept your legs fit. Yeah. So, Joanne, it didn't take you very long after turning pro to capture your first major. You won the 71 U.S. Women's Open at Kakwa Club in Pennsylvania by 7 over.
Yeah.
Kathy Whitworth.
Right. I remember that one.
I'll bet you do.
Yeah. It was the rough was really deep. And, you know, and typical USGA, they narrow down the fairways. And so you couldn't not get in it. But I could get in it and get out of it with a 3 or 4 iron. And most of the other girls couldn't. And so I had decided that if I, because the greens are very, very tricky there, that if I didn't three putt, I would really be in contention to win. So I worked on my putting and whatnot, and I got to the 17th hole, par 5. I drove it 310, which was the longest I had ever hit. And the 18th hole was uphill all the way to the green, and I drove it 295 uphill. I played with Mary Mills, and I remember Mary Mills was going in with a 4-wood, I think, and I had a, you know, I'm looking right at the pin. I had a little short wedge in, so I hit it on, and then it was my turn to putt for a birdie, and I got up over the putt, and I said, "Jeepers, I wonder if I really need this," you know, because I hadn't looked at the scoreboard, and I looked up at the scoreboard. And the next name was 8 shots different behind me. Yeah. So I said, "Holy mackerel.
Don't really need it."
And I just started laughing. I burst out laughing before I hit the putt. So then I two-putted and won the first one.
Yeah, Bruce, third place was 11 shots back.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
It was quite a dominant win. You led after 54 by 5 over Mary Mills. You mentioned Mary. And I don't know if you remember this quote, Joanne, but I picked up this quote from you that's something you would have said supposedly over after the second round. "If I don't three-putt, I should win this tournament."
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Because most of them couldn't get out of the rough. And being long, there were a lot of hills there, and I could carry them. And the others were hitting into the hills. So it made for a long golf course for them.
Yeah. So you became the first person to win 3 USGA championships, different championships, Tiger Woods, of course, being the fellow that had won the same 3 on the men's side, of course, years later.
Yeah.
Quite an accomplishment.
Yeah. But it's... like I say, the USGA events were my favorite events because you always, even as a junior, you played really fine golf courses And you always had all the tricky pin placements. You know, you had to curve the ball into the pins and whatnot, to get at them. But other than that, you know, it was totally different than a regular tour event.
It sounds to me like you almost felt coming into those weeks that you had a bit of an edge.
Yeah, I really feared no one, you know. So, you know, even playing exhibitions with the men.
Hear that? That's the sound of a walk-off albatross, a 2 on a par 5 to win a 2-day golf tournament. That shot happened to me, 1 in 600 million odds. Since then, people call me Albie. Now, I've told this story so often, my friends can't take it. I'm pretty sure my wife, next time I tell her, she's going to leave me. So I decided to start a podcast to tell the entire world about it because it deserves it. It's the craziest shot you've never heard of. And guess what? There's tons more stories like this all around golf. And that's what our podcast is all about. Join me and my fellow degenerates, Panda and Shepherd, as we dive into them. Insane bets, crazy what-if scenarios, and all the you had to be there type moments in golf. Find us wherever you get your podcast. Did I tell you about my albatross?
Yeah. Well, you won one other time at the Bluegrass Invitational that year in 1971 at Hunting Creek. That was a win by 3 over Sandra Haney. And you know, we've only got 40 some wins to talk about, so we won't be able to get into all the details. But Bruce, we'll jump ahead 3 years, and 74 was a heck of a year.
6 victories in 74. I find it interesting, though. You know, you have a great start to your career. You win a couple of times in 71, then nothing in 72, and nothing in 73, and then bang, off you went. 74, 6 wins, Joanne.
Yeah, it was if I was going through not winning, when, you know, you put in a little extra time and whatnot and some lessons, and then all of a sudden everything starts to click, and, you know, you just ride it. You know, you're driving well, you're putting well, you're recovery shots are all there. So, you know, previous, you might make 3-4 birdies around, but when you're not winning, you're making 3 or 4 bogeys around. So
yeah,
when you're winning, you're making the birdies, but not making any bogeys. And I just got on a roll. So
what happened in 72-73? Anything in particular in terms of your game? And
I had the shanks and the half shanks.
Not good.
No. In fact, you know, I've always had a nickname all my life. You know, many, many different ones, but one was Shank. And Mary... I'll think of her name. But anyway, she nicknamed me Shank because I was trying to drive a par 4 green and hit it into the hill just short of the green and went to hit the wedge up. I'm in the rough now, shooting up to the green, very short distance. I shanked it. So I just walked over, shanked it. And then I did it the third time. And Mary Bryan, who I was playing with, said, "Jesus, Joanne, change clubs." And I said, "Why? I'm just getting the hang of it." So then I was called Shank. So.
Well, the next year was a pretty good one, too, Bruce, 1975.
Yeah, really good. Won the American Defender in North Ridge Country Club, a Girl Talk Classic, and then the Peter Jackson, which I think at one point in time, that after you'd won it, become a major, didn't it?
That's right. I won it twice, and it didn't count as a major because they voted it in, I think, the year after.
Yeah, it was 1979 that, you know, what became the Du Maurier, that Canadian right. Open, if you will. We've had several of our guests that have just missed out on technical majors because they won it the year or two or three before.
Right.
Yeah.
And that was a major through 2000 when the British Open, Ladies British Open, became a major. So three wins in 75, and then boom, 76, four more. So you're really on a roll right now.
Yeah. You know, once I got going, I worked with Gardner Dickinson and then went to Sam Snead, you know, at the end of my career. You start to figure out your swing and your flaws. When you start to play well, you know that you usually have, I was going to say, three things that you do wrong, you know, continuously almost your entire life. And once you figure those out, you can correct a round that is not going properly because you know you start a process of elimination to get which one you're doing wrong, you know. So that makes your play so much easier. And, you know, if you can eliminate the one bad round or something, then you're going to be in contention all the time.
Yeah. Well, by now, you're racking up all these wins. You're starting to win golf tournaments a second time. You're repeating a lot of your titles. As a matter of fact, the thing that stands out about your record, Joanne, is I believe you were a repeat winner at least 13 different events, including three wins at the Elizabeth Arden Classic.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not sure anybody else has done that.
No, come to think of it, unless it would be Whitworth, I can't think of that, but I think it goes back to, you get a golf course that you like.
Yeah. Horse for courses, right? Horse yeah. for courses. Yeah. You know, yes. you win once and you love the place and you come back and you feel like you can do it again.
You know how to play every hole. You know, you see the picture of where you want to hit it.
Well, the back end of 76 was your U.S. Women's Open Championship at Rolling Green Country Club in Pennsylvania, where you won in the playoff with Sandra Palmer. And that must have been a tough week again, because the winning score there, like the first time you won, was, you know, well over par.
It had rained, and Rolling Green is a long golf course to begin with. There's a lot of hills you're heading into. And with the rain, you got no roll. So it played very, very long. And then the greens there are really severe. So if you weren't hitting it long enough to have a short iron in your hand to get the ball close to the hole, putting became really, really treacherous out there. So that's why the scores weren't very good.
Yeah.
But they even rolled one. The last hole, because it was so wet that some people were going in with three wood for the third shot.
Oh my goodness!
You know, it just was a very difficult golf course that day. So,
well, what you're describing sounds to me like Advantage Corner.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. That was. The higher you hit it and carry it, the better.
So 18-hole playoff on Monday against Sandra Palmer.
Yeah.
You open up with a birdie.
Yeah, I was ready to go. You know,
four-shot lead.
Know, that's what I always tried to bury the first hole because that puts you in a frame of mind of aggressiveness. You know, you have to stay aggressive out there. You know, you don't necessarily go from aggressive to defensive, but you have to watch when you're playing that you don't get the in between and lose your aggressiveness.
Yeah, so you had a four-shot lead on the 14th tee. Next thing you know, Ms. Palmer picks up five shots on the next three holes.
Yeah, I don't remember those.
Well, but you then birdie 17, Sandra bogeys the final two holes, and you go on to a victory shooting 76 to her 78 in that playoff. That was then your record eighth USGA title.
Right. That was, you know, it was fun. Now, I mean, the only sad part was they never set up a women's senior open so I could go for the record of USGA.
Yeah.
You know, I just needed one more to tie Bobby Jones. So, man. Any USGA win is great. So.
Yeah, sure and, it is. And you're right. It was you're in great company with the others that have had that number of USGA titles. Bobby Jones, as you mentioned, with nine, and also Tiger Woods, who won three juniors, three amateurs, and three U.S. Opens. So now we move into the last year of college for me, Joanne. You won 16 times when I was in college. So we're in 1977, and you win three more times.
Yeah. Well, you know, you just you get going. You know, it's always sad that it never lasts. You know, throughout the entire year, but you know, you're as good as your driver, wedge, and putter. So. When they're all clicking, then you're going to be right in contention.
You know, you might make the argument that you were on a roll and in the zone for years, but how long can you truly be in the zone? I mean, as you look back on your career, what was the longest stretch where you just had it dialed in?
I don't remember. You know, I mean, you could go back and look at the record, but as far as me remembering, you know, I, you know, because you had to take time off without burning yourself out. So, you know, you wouldn't play, you know, 15 tournaments in a row. You just get exhausted.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And we stayed in the travel trailer so that, you know, you had to make that drive. That was usually a day and a half drive at least, you know. So
yeah.
You were exhausted when you got there. So.
Yeah.
We talk about staying strong in a stretch between 76 and 83. Think about this. 23 victories Joanne had in that period of time. So that would be what you would consider an extremely long streak.
Yeah. See, I didn't know that until you mentioned it. So,
quite remarkable.
Yeah.
It sure is. I mean, you mentioned your two Peter Jackson wins, the second of which came over Hollis Stacey by eight strokes in 1978. Again, that was the year before it became a major. So you had two right before they actually turned it into a major. But two wins in 78, a couple of wins in 79, and then 1980, another five-win year. Winning at Whirlpool, Bent Tree, Sunstar, Honda, Lady Keystone, and probably a couple of those repeat victories for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
think Honda, you had just gone back to back with a four stroke win over Judy Rankin. And you know, just when it's going great, it almost gets better because you've got another player of the year the next year in 1981.
Yeah. I like player of the year, but I always tried to win the Vair trophy, which is the low scoring average for the year, right, which tells you how
good you play.
Well, you have kept your game. So
yeah, very good.
So give us a bit of an appreciation, our listeners, particularly on how the game up to this point, the ladies' professional game has changed from when you turned pro. Then we get into the 70s, and you've got the advent of the Dinah Shore with David Foster getting involved and Colgate-Palmolive and putting some money into the game. Television becomes real for the women. Tell us a little bit about some of those changes that really start transforming the game of women's golf.
Well, you know, when I started, other than the U.S. Open, we played a lot of terrible golf courses. And putting, you know, I call them MIA greens, which not missing in action, but minutes in the air, since they were so
minutes
bad.
In the air.
And then all of a sudden, as we're starting to grow, David Foster with Colgate decides he wants to have some women players on his staff of sports people. And so then he selects Dinah Shore, which was the most popular TV program on, which Colgate sponsored. Dinah was a tennis player. And so David Foster asked if she would sponsor, use her name as in the sponsorship of the Colgate Dinah Shore golf tournament. And so she did, and she started taking lessons and ended up doing extremely well, you know, because she had the athletic ability from playing so much tennis that it worked fine for her. But up until then, you know, we really never got national attention. And this would be the first time we're going to be on TV other than the U.S. Open. You know, that was part of the agreement that when they signed up for the men's Open, they had to agree to play the women. So we were like also-rans. And then when Colgate came in and started the Dinah Shore tournament in Palm Springs, California, that put us on the map, really. So, and they started using some of the girls in their commercials. So that was a big income that players had never had before. Yeah, mm-hmm. So it was starting to really expand at that point. And then you started getting more companies involved. When they saw how successful the Dinah Shore was, it became easier and easier to get major sponsors to these tournaments.
Yeah, Colgate-Palmolive set a wonderful example for other companies, particularly in America. The purse on tour, LPGA tour in 1970, was $435,000. That was for the whole season, right?
Right.
Fast forward 10 years to 1980, it was up to $5.2 million. So the times, they were a-changing.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And that was when we started to, late 70s and 80s, play international events. We would go to Japan, we'd go to Australia. We did some Colgate events in other countries, you know, so the, over in the Philippines and that. So it was, everything was starting to really pop for the women professionals. And we were getting the exposure in Japan, who had some good players who were coming mm-hmm. over. Then, you know, the Koreans came in after I had left. So it was mainly Japan, but it started growing there. So from when I started, I mean, it's amazing how far everything is and how many countries you now have to go play in, you know, yeah. that you never dreamed you'd ever even see. So,
yeah.
And the yeah. purses, you know, they win in a major one. They win more in 1 year in that tournament than I did in my career. So it makes amazing. You a little mad, but you really see how far it's grown.
Yeah, I haven't done the math, but I bet you could probably win the U.S. Open this next year and win more money than the LPGA paid out in the whole decade of the 60s.
Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing?
Thank you for listening to another episode of For the Good of the Game. And please, wherever you listen to your podcast on Apple and Spotify, if you like what you hear, please subscribe, spread the word, and tell your friends. Until we tee it up again, for the good of the game, so long, everybody.
Whack down the fairway, it went smack down the fairway. Then it started to slice just smidge off line. It headed for two, but it bounced off nine. My caddy says, long as you're still in the state, you're okay. Yes, it went straight down the middle, quite a way.